So I'm going to have the experts introduce themselves, and then we're going to dig right in. Go ahead. We'll start with you, James.
Hello. Hello? Okay. Hi, I'm James Cooney. I'm a director of software engineering at Pearson Education, and my remit includes internal tools for content authoring across narrative, assessment, semantic markup, transformation, multimedia.
Hey, Will Kreth, executive director of EIDR, the Entertainment ID Registry. And if you stayed this long, I know you're staying a little longer to watch this panel and get that drink afterwards. So thank you so much.
Yes, thank you for staying for drinks. My name's Dave Klee. I'm with A&E Networks, A&E Lifetime, History Channel, a few other things, working on our new group on the technology side, working to rebuild our media supply chain internally, what happens from the time we receive a master to the time it gets distributed all the places it needs to go, and moving a lot of that into the cloud as well. So last talk applies very well.
Hi, my name is Maciej Ochman. My first name is almost as complicated as media supply chain. I work for a corporation for public broadcasting, and my role is really to translate technology into plain English for business model decisions and to enable a corporation to really understand where technology is heading. So I look at the different type of technologies. Media supply chain is one of them, and I have plenty of fun doing it.
All right. And we're going to be obviously talking about digital transformation 2.0. As I said in kind of opening remarks, you know, we're talking about what are we going to do in 2020? And technology, we were talking about that 10 years ago, 5 years ago. Where do we want to be, and what do we want to accomplish? And Scott from Microsoft made a great comment, which I love, about how change happens so fast. And, you know, Microsoft is a good example, I guess, if they're only doing things, what did he say, quarterly, about forecasting. So it's hard to forecast, you know, within organizations sometimes, what the latest and greatest technology will be next year. So you have to, you know, with making any type of transformation, you have to deal with internal end users, and you have to make your customers and fans super, super happy. So when you think about how is this transformation going to happen, I think the best place to start is with your internal end users. And how are you guys dealing with making your internal users happy with the tools they have, or introducing new tools to them? And what's some of the methodologies you're using for that?
I could probably start. So at Pearson, it's really a partnership with the leaders from the different groups. Because it's a company that came out of a publishing background, they have print workflows that are really burned in and have a lot of efficiencies. So we want to take those efficiencies, and they don't map one-to-one to the digital transformation space, but really utilize them and make it a partnership. We've been fortunate. The leadership of the digital studios groups really are on board with these changes that we're looking to make.
That's awesome. Dave, sure. You're dealing with a lot of end users.
Yes, a lot of end users. No, it's nice because we're taking a relatively fresh look at what we're doing at A&E internally for our media supply chain. And I personally am a big believer in targeted tools to do specific jobs well. Prior to A&E, I was at some other larger media companies, and we were big into enterprise systems, building big enterprise MAMs, and that's great, but I find that you hit a point where you have the interfaces that are trying to do everything for everybody, and tools that are trying to do everything for everybody. It's very hard to make that work for everybody really well. So we sort of adopted a newer approach of very targeted tools that do specific jobs really well, tying back to centralized systems, tying back to databases that all make sure that the data is related to each other, but getting the interfaces to the point where users feel it's very clear to do what they need to do on a daily basis, where the individual tasks are very streamlined and that user interface is very targeted, kind of like a micro UI approach. Mm-hmm. And so far, I found people have been happier with that and like the idea of having a very light training, very straightforward, very simple interface to get the high throughput tasks done that take a lot of time.
So going from this concept within your organization, oh, one size fits all, so everyone has to use the same tools and your end users are begging you, I don't like this clutter that's right. All these extra things that don't do anything for me.
Right, we're building, essentially we're trying to use toolkits to build UIs that are very specific, so even different departments have a slightly different view of the exact same job or the exact same type of data that's just exactly streamlined for what they need to do every day. Yeah, trying to really get down to that micro level.
So, and then every organization, you know, you're trying to make everybody happy, right? All of you are within whatever space you're in, right? So how do you deal with that? How do you deal with trying to make all these different groups happy with the technology? Trouble.
Yeah,
you go.
Yeah. But I mean, the job I have and my internal clients are a really different kind because Corporation for Public Broadcasting does not really do that type of work. My internal clients are people who really try to help public media through different means. Reach the points that, for instance, Renard was talking about, okay? So I need to explain some of those things that are happening on the technology side to them so they can make the best educated decisions where to invest their time and money to help our customers, in a sense, which is PBS, NPR, and their member stations. So, you know, media supply chain and the UI and all the different components of it are part of this translation process that I have to really impart on my coworkers or the decision makers. But there is one thing that you touched upon, which is what's going to happen in 2020. And I think that there are a lot of things going on that are happening really fast. And that is the convergence of different technologies through certain technological solutions. So we have been talking about OTT constantly. This is the biggest thing. With the new ATSC 3.0 over the air technology, which is also IP stack based, we will have, you know, if we thought that we ever had very complicated media workflows, now you should embrace for much more. It's gonna triple or quadruple, and blockchain will not help us because it's gonna get really complicated. And if we really look at this and we really want to monetize what, you know, our content, if we look at some of the data that comes in, you know, you have different generations looking at different devices at different times for different type of content. And now you can combine that for OTT and OTA delivery. So that means you have to really fully understand where the new technologies are heading with enabling them to deliver to ever-demanding audiences. So I think that we need to really, you know, kind of be able to step back and understand what's coming. Because it will be getting, I think, quite complicated.
Yeah, I really agree with that. That the pace of change is really accelerating. That's come up before too. And so it's not about trying to build a perfect system or solve the problem in a perfect way. It's about building a process that you're constantly able to adapt and solve new problems and kind of move forward with the next iteration. And that I think that's a really important part of the process. You're never going to have a perfect media management system, a perfect supply chain end-to-end. It's about doing small projects that are constantly iterating and improving, because as soon as you think you have it perfect, like, the next thing's going to come out and, you know, somebody's going to decide IMF really does work and is a standard, and you have to redesign everything for that. It's always going to keep changing. So there you go.
No, I was just going to say that the human element, we heard Renard talk about it, I've heard other folks talk about it, the irreplaceable nature of still of all of us not having to worry about the robots coming to take our jobs. We have a terrific relationship with our audience, with our our membership, our participant membership of EIDR members, what we like to refer to as our curated crowd of participant companies who have gone through a process of working closely with us in our human interfaces. A gentleman over there, Clint Richmond, many of you may know, our director of operations, coming down from Boston. Thank you, Clint. In educating and kind of sharing the knowledge commonwealth of what the registry is about and how to interface with us and how to bring well-formed metadata into our world. So in that dynamic of trying to say how we're trying to better connect with our audiences, we are both using newer technologies for our new tech platform we're working on now, and also fully cognizant and aware that we have to have a human element to all of it.
Yeah, it's interesting in terms of the rate of change that my preference would be for sort of faster iteration, more agile, but when we work with sort of vendors, so it's an internal tool and it's not consumer scale, but it's still a pretty large user base, and we have to balance that because you sometimes have training, people who are doing this professionally as opposed to an end user, and you sometimes do need to slow down a little bit so that they can actually adapt and do their job successfully.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's also very true too. I think expectation management is like a big part of the process of building up change internally in an organization, having people understand what's coming and manage the expectations that you're not sprinkling fairy dust and magically solving lots of problems.
Right, because one of the things I always like telling people, you're only as fast as your slowest runner. So if you're measuring success and you have someone who's not adapting to something new, and maybe they are either an executive or one of your favorite end users, whoever, that could hinder some success. So what other ways are you guys measuring success with some of the things that you're doing, training and working closely with end users internally?
Throughput, how many titles are going through a system. Oh. That's really the big measurement at the moment that I see, at least in the tools we're working on. But that's part of the digital transformation, right? People are going from an old workflow to a new one, and one of the big value propositions is time to market, that you could speed that up. So if you're gonna demonstrate that you're actually delivering on your promise, you need to show that volume of titles that are going through the new workflow.
Yeah, definitely. Throughput, volume, and storage are big things for us. We're constantly keeping track of how much storage we're using in each location as we're migrating things out of legacy archives. And it's really important to have those metrics because, especially as you start to move more into the cloud and you start to move more into SaaS-based tools, you have to be aware of what the costs are going to be associated with those because they start shifting from these big capital projects that we're funding every few years to subscriptions we're paying every month. So knowing what those metrics are, and for us, those big ones, just the same type of thing, storage and volume and throughput, processing time.
OpEx as opposed to CapEx.
Yes, absolutely.
It can get ugly.
Absolutely, yeah. Knowing what you're getting into and knowing how to plan for that is super important to help identify as you're going through all those projects.
Yeah, Macha, your customers and viewers and clients and all, how are you measuring success with that?
That's a tricky question because, again, CPB, works in a different way, okay? We don't have really direct customers. My customers are PBS, NPR, and their member stations, right? And they have their own measurements. I can tell you in general terms from my previous experiences, interesting enough, I used to work with Chris Carey at Verizon Digital Media Services, with Renard at Discovery Communications, and every one of them had different ways to measure success, KPIs. I would say one general statement about workflows and measuring internally. I think that we have an opportunity because technologies are merging, something that we used to be really proud of in broadcast industry, that we have our own sets of standards and deliverables and technologies. Now this is all merging with IT-based technologies, right, to enable the delivery of content anywhere, anytime, to any device. But I think that there is also an opportunity for us to really take from the IT industry some of the processes, improvement processes that they have, right? What it used to be called ITIL, process improvement. And I think that there is an opportunity to introduce that and really use that to measure KPIs and see how well we are doing. And it's not only on the technology side, but also on the human side, to see how we can improve the way people work so then they can refocus their attention and their talent to do something else, whatever that might be, whatever the business says. So to me, the success and measurement is if we are able to progress these areas within the organizations. And if we do, I think then we are successful.
Mm-hmm. And you talk about success within the digital media supply chain, and they started talking about standards in two sessions prior. Where does that all fit in? The standards in these digital supply chains and in these digital workflows that are happening. I'm going to pick on Will, because this is your area.
Well, yeah, I think on the previous panel, or two panels ago, Shiv had some mixed opinions on standards. Mm-hmm. But we're all here to talk about the value that's added by people agreeing on a set of principles that makes sense for all the different players in a B2B environment. And that's one of the things that we represent is the notion that universal IDs are not just a nice to have, they're a must have and a path to the future. So I wanted to add a little bit onto the previous thing around where KPIs we talked about.
Sure,
have a chance
course,
to chime in on that. It's quite all right. Some of the success metrics we have internally are around not everything from just like behavioral like API calls, but also the fact that the registry that we've created back in 2010, now a 10th anniversary coming up, either 2020. Look for the campaign next year. Around the notion that like, we doubled in 2 years. We went from six years, we went to a million. In 2 more years, we doubled. So the exponential growth is another metric of success, a small KPI measurement of success. And that sense of how we try to then broadcast that back out to our community. We have what we call the Eider community. We share the information back with our membership. All those KPIs feed back into the notion that what we're creating and creating a standard, a commonwealth of information around film and television, is valuable and it is has buy-in at the highest senior level of all the companies that we're working with. So that is a validation for us that we're on the right path in pursuing a global ISO standard.
I would add that standards are absolute must. We have, just like we need to communicate with each other, machines need to communicate with each other, and without standards, there is no flow. There is, dead ends, and you can't really do what you're supposed to do. So standards build that. Now, do we have many more standards than needed? I mean, I don't know. That's discussion, you know, we can have, but I think they're absolutely necessary.
Especially for workflows in the supply chain from the start to the finish to your fans and customer base, right? From requirements to research, kind of what are your plans for the future with making an awesome supply chain?
Yeah, sure. For us, we're relatively early in our journey of taking a fresh look and moving things along.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to be very agile in our approach, so solve specific problems at specific times. So right now we're looking at our ingest and then our what I might call human review, quality control, tech evaluation, depends what you call it, goes by many different names, but making sure you have what you want and then it's okay and it's ready to move on. And so I think for us, the next few months are big into rebuilding those processes and leveraging some new tools there that will help us with bottlenecks and throughput. And then for us, I think probably the other big thing is jumping to the end of the supply chain where we have all the digital distribution endpoints. I think all told we send to around 250 different people, and many people require different video files, but almost everybody requires a different set of metadata, so helping streamline and manage that process and make it make more sense save a lot of human annotation and human changes to that process, I think will be very helpful for us. That's what we're focused on.
Yeah. I have a question for you, though. So you're trying to tackle all these different workflows. Could you give some advice to people out in the audience who are also trying to tackle several different workflows? And again, it's kind of back to the silos, right?
Yeah.
Kind of metadata tagging, right? Everyone's like, that's not my job. I don't get the big fat raise at the end of the year for adding 5 words to every piece of content.
No, it's a very good point. It's a tough one to incentivize the right thing to happen at the right time, but I find people really care about their jobs and what they're doing every day. Mm-hmm. And if you can help people make that process go better, if you actually solve real problems and help people's jobs improve, just the 5 clicks that go down to 2 or the, you know, 50 clicks that go down to 5, like, people get very happy about that. And so as a part of that process, I think it's important to build in and show people how that streamlining can help them, but can also help other folks in different places in the supply chain, kind of show people the connectivity, like you were talking about, going across the flow, across that entire process, looking at how things relate to each other. So it's, I think when you're really solving a problem for somebody and they see their job get better, they're very much on board. But if you do it just for its own sake, like, here, add 5 keywords and, you know, this is now a new thing in your job, people are less excited.
Yes.
So you gotta split that balance, and I'm a big believer in solving real problems and solving targeted problems that really improve people's day to day.
James?
Yeah, my experience has been that people will adopt change when they have to, kind of reluctantly. But the real value we've been able to see in some areas is providing opportunity for innovation. So if they're able to put together in the education space, a new courseware experience that's really differentiating, that isn't just like an EPUB player, and a media supply chain that facilitates them and gives them sort of faster tools to actually construct those, that's where we've seen more success in sort of going across the silos. I mean, silos are always gonna be a challenge. There's not gonna be a magic bullet for that, but actually being able to sort of enable better innovation and an actual better experience for the end student or instructor, that's where I think you could really make a difference. Because if you just speed things up or make things a little bit cheaper, that's good for the company, it's good for the company's bottom line, we want to do that. But we really want to make the actual end experience really differentiating in a meaningful way.
Mache, you have anything to add, Will?
I think if you enable people to contribute, and you recognize this, they have a personal stake in the work, and if you trust their intelligence and help them understand why things are done, you are going to have really great cooperation and help from the teams. So I think it's a simple equation. And technology is changing so fast, we are not able to really grasp this because there are so many different things. And what am I supposed to tell people that, let's say, next year you have 5G coming in with the new television standard 3.0, and now we're going to be delivering new things and really don't know how this is going to happen. I mean, look at Verizon. I mean, they're setting up 5G labs for people to figure out how to properly deliver content and how they're going to do this and come up with apps and a whole bunch of other things. And this is a brave new world, and we'll have many more challenges. So it's very easy for us to get lost, especially the human side and people. And everybody wants to feel irrelevant. So I think we have a lot to do, not only in grasping the meaning for our future businesses with the new technologies, but also how to properly treat one another when implementing those new technologies for good business outcomes.
I think we should carry on because.
Okay, we have 5 minutes left.
It's a crucial 5-minute clock countdown.
Yes, absolutely. But I
gotta play final countdown in a second.
Dun dun dun. Real quick question, and it's for me. It's because it sparked Macha, you said something, you know, how all of you guys are talking about how fast technology changes. Upper management, the big bosses, like, how are you dealing with some of their demands while you're still trying to satisfy your end users, whatever department they're in? And I'll pick on the marketing department because they deal with a lot of the outward-facing kind of fans and customers' engagement from that end. How are you guys dealing with the big bosses on top who are also demanding change? Not sometimes they may or may not be doing this. I'm not speaking for you. They may not give you the budget that you want to do it quickly, and they're demanding this change. And sometimes they don't embrace it, so they say it, but they don't mean it. How are you dealing with that, or are you not? Are you guys lucky enough to have bosses and executives and boards of directors?
So maybe I just have a low appetite for risk, but my take on it is actually that the leadership is interested in and open to rapid change in many areas. And I think the challenge is you can't do it all at once. You really need to break it down into smaller problems. You know, it's the boil the ocean cliche. Mm-hmm. And so the challenge I see is actually figuring out tactics that align to their strategic goals that allow you to break it up and make progress and move the needle, but actually see real results rather than trying to do 50 things at once and failing at all of them.
Yeah. No, I think that's right on board. I would say I feel lucky to have wonderfully engaged management who has been fantastic. I'm not sure if any of them are in the room. I don't think so, but
yeah.
Wonderful people.
And it sounds like you're not boiling the ocean there either.
Yeah, well, yeah. and that's the cliche, but I think that's very true. I think you have to be very targeted about what you're doing, but that's a great opportunity then to engage management, engage leadership on a regular basis to talk about what are the strategic objectives for the organization, what's coming up, what are the big initiatives, the big directions that the organization is going in, and then using that as leverage to help prioritize whatever the next round of small projects needs to be to really move that along. I think there's a great opportunity for engagement there when phrased the right way, but you also have to be very strategic about those engagements and make sure that you're messaging in a way that makes sense and you're messaging for folks who are busy with a lot of things to worry about other than the particular day-to-day concerns of either the technology or the operations of what we're all doing, but really are engaged in how the overall business is going to be affected by some very positive change. There's a great opportunity for dialogue there that can go a long way.
Yeah.
Just a quick note, because public media in the U.S. is, you know, does not have infinite resources. You mentioned, Dave, about targeted. So not only targeted decision making, but very frugal. And those who understand this know that they have to really make decisions that are right for the system, right for public media. So waste, financial waste, and otherwise is brought to absolute minimum because we cannot afford to work otherwise. And at least in our case, our management understands this. So it's easier. So they are looking for excuses to new use or create or deploy new technologies, but in a manner that is really frugal from the financial point of view, at least.
Thank you, sir. I would say that, like Dave said, very fortunate to have an engaged executive senior management team, my board of directors with EITR. We're an interesting animal. We're a nonprofit funded by the film and television industry, and just even had a call this week with our board talking about the next few years of our roadmap, and had tremendous feedback and support from, you know, Disney, CAA, Comcast, NBCU, Warner, Sony, about that the fact that we're on the right path and that our technology platform is worth investing and reinvesting in for the future. So that sense that when you have that support at the board or the C-level suite, and you have the team saying, you know, look, the technology stack for the next 5-10 years needs a reinvestment, and they're willing to do so, it's a tremendous opportunity to be in that place as a nonprofit in M&E.
Engaged executives. Okay, we're out of time, but I'm going to see if we can have at least one question.
I'm so sorry. Is there a question from the audience that...
Our esteemed panelists are available.
They are esteemed.
For a beer or a glass of wine or whatever's upstairs.
We can continue this up on the gorgeous roof deck overlooking beautiful Times Square with some nosh and some beer and some wine. So first of all, thank you, Mary. Thank you to this amazing panel. You guys rock.
Thank you.
Way to close it and bring the energy.